like David has betrayed Israel. Now he hasn't, but he's fleeing from Saul. He goes to the Philistines and he persuades the king that he's turned, that he's now going to betray Israel and fight for the Philistines. And what David does is he goes into the countryside, and there's all those ancient races, the Girgashites and so on. He attacks them and kills them. And then he persuades the king of the Philistines that he's attacked the Israelites. So the king of the Philistines is convinced that David is on their side. And so much so that the king decides, the Philistine king decides to launch a massive all-out campaign against Israel. And David's going to fight with him. He asks David where David seems to have been trapped. He's convinced the Philistine king, he's turned to him and his side. And so the king says, right, fight with me then on this great campaign against Israel. Now that's what happens in chapter 28, verses 1 and 2. And what I want you to notice is if you put your finger there at verse 2 of chapter 28, go across to chapter 29, and you can see that it's seamless. What you could easily do is read from chapter 28 and verse 2, and you can go straight into chapter 29. So chapter 29, verse 1 says, the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek, and all Israel encamped by a fountain in Jezreel. So it's a seamless way of reading the text to go from chapter 28, verse 2 to chapter 29, verse 1. It's the story of David, the Philistines, the battle against Israel. It just seems flawless. And what our writer does is into that story, he slots in the account of Saul and the witch of Endor. Now, it's very much like, and I've noticed this before in the reading of the Bible, think of a TV program that you've watched. Think of a film that you've watched. And every film or every TV program is about lots of different characters. And you have one scene with one character, and it reaches this great moment of tension, and then we swap to another character and another scene. Now that's exactly what's going on here in 1 Samuel. We've been following David as he seems to be a traitor in Philistine land, persuading the king he's on his side. We've been following that. We reach a moment of a battle. What's David going to do? David is stuck now, and then we swap, and we swap dramatically to the story of Saul and the witch of Endor. Now, I hope you get a sense of that, because you know it, don't you? You know it from TV shows and films. This is how stories are told. We swap dramatically at moments of high tension. Well, that's happened to you. So our writer, he puts right slap bang into the middle of this story of David being trapped by his own plans. He puts the story of Saul and the witch of Endor. So we're going to take it section by section, and I want you to think as we go through it, what's the lessons to learn? So verse 3 then of chapter 28, let's do the first section. Now Samuel had died, we knew that, we've been told that before, and all Israel lamented for him and buried him in Ramah, which was his own city. And Saul, now what's this got to do with anything? Saul had cleared the land of all witches, mediums, spiritists. What's the connection there? Verse 4. So the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem. Saul gathered all Israel together and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by the prophet. So there's your first section. And you can imagine Saul looking out and seeing the army of the Philistines, vast numbers, and he's terrified. And he wants guidance. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know if he's going to triumph over the Philistines. He is caught in that situation where he wants guidance and none is available to him. So look at what he does in verse 6. He seeks guidance from the Lord and he's persistent. He tries different ways of having guidance. He asks if any of the prophets have had a word from God. He tells the priests to use the Urim. Now, the Urim were a bit like dice. You'd roll them like dice to see what the answer would be. And dreams, that's Saul himself, a bit like Pharaoh or a bit like Abraham, hoping that God would speak to him in dreams. And this first section ends with a deafening silence from God. And then you get the next section. So let's have a look at verse 7. So Saul said to his servants, find me a woman who is a medium, someone who consults the dead, that I may go to her and inquire of her, get guidance from her. But his servant said to him, well, look, all we know is that there's one woman who is a medium and she lives in En-Dor. So Saul disguised himself, put on non-royal clothes, and he went with two men with him. And they came to the woman by night. Now, I want you to notice that reference. And he said to this woman, please conduct a seance for me and bring up for me, and this, that's important, bring up for me the one whose name I will give to you. But the woman said to him, now look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cast off all the mediums and all the spiritists from the land. Why are you seeking to trap me and cause me to die? So she thinks, not that this is Saul, but she thinks it's a spy out to trap her so that she might then be killed. Verse 10. Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for doing this for me. So the woman said, so the seance starts, and the woman says, whom shall I bring up for you? And he said, bring up Samuel. So when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman said to Saul, you've deceived me, for you are the king. And the king said to her, do not be afraid. Tell me, what do you see? So she brings up Samuel. She recognizes Samuel, but Saul can't see a thing. This is all going on in the spirit world, if you like. So he can't see Samuel himself. She does, because she's a spiritist. Who do you see? And she says, verse 13, I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth. And then he questions her, what is his form? And he said, he's an old man. He's coming up from the ground and he wears a mantle. Now, you know, the mantle is a cloak. It's the symbol of a prophet. So Saul knew straight away that it must be Samuel. And so Saul stooped his face to the ground and he bowed down. Now, there's your next scene. It's a seance. And that's remarkable, isn't it, that you should have in the Bible a seance taking place. And let me stress to you again, Saul sees nothing of this because it's the woman who is getting in touch with the realm of the spirit. She sees Samuel rise from the ground. She describes to Saul what she sees. Saul recognizes that this must be Samuel, and so he bows to the ground. There's your seance. And you come then to the next scene, verse 15. Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? And Saul answered, I am deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophets nor by dreams. And this is the reason I called you, that you may show me what I should do. Now, what I want you to be very clear about is it's the woman who speaks. Saul speaks to her. She answers in Samuel's voice, and they have this conversation. Verse 16, Samuel says, "Why do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy? The Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me. For the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David. Because you did not obey the voice of the Lord, nor execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore the Lord has done this thing to you today. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." Now there is the woman speaking the voice of Samuel the prophet. And Samuel the prophet, through the woman, gives the guidance that Saul has been seeking. You're going to die. Your sons are going to die in the battle tomorrow. Israel is going to be defeated. The Philistines will triumph. And that is all that takes place in the seance. And that's the end of the session, if you like, in the seance itself. And then you come to the last scene, verse 20. "Immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel. There was no strength left in him, for he had eaten no food all day or all night. So the woman, the medium, she came to Saul, and she could see that he was severely troubled. So she said to him, 'Listen, your maidservant has done what you've asked, and I've put my life in your hands, and in listen to your words which you spoke to me. Now therefore let me listen, make it, will you please listen to my voice, the voice of your maidservant. Let me set some bread before you, and you may eat, that you may have strength when you go on your way.' Saul refused and said, 'I'll not eat.' But his servants, together with the woman, urged him, and he listened to their voice. Then he arose from the ground and sat on the bed. And the woman had a fatted calf in the house. So she rushed to kill it. She took flour and kneaded it. She baked unleavened bread from it. And she brought it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. Then they rose and went away that night." Now there's your seance. Then you have this scene at the end in which this witch, this medium, this spiritist, call her what you like, she sees the distress that Saul is in, and there's this play on voice. So you've had the voice of Samuel through the woman, and Saul's voice commanding the woman. And then the woman says, "Listen to my voice. Now listen to me. I've listened to you. You've listened to Samuel. Listen to me. Eat something, because you're so weak and you're so frail. Eat something." And he says, "No, I'm not going to eat something." So she keeps persuading him. The servants join in. They manage to persuade Saul to eat something. And then instead of just a piece of bread, they prepare this meal. It's a celebratory meal. It's an extensive meal. It would have taken hours to prepare. It's a fancy meal that she prepares for him. And he then eats, and then he leaves. So that's the witch, the spiritist, the medium of Endor. And our job is to find God. Our job is to find what lesson there is to learn. This passage is not like last Sunday's, which was known as a godless passage. There was no mention of God in chapter 27. You get mentions here again and again about the Lord. So it's not like that. How do we find any meaning, any comfort, any encouragement in these pages? So let's just try and get there. Sometimes when we set off, we don't know where we'll arrive. We know what to do, and it's sometimes a surprise when we get to the end. So let's work a few things out then, shall we? So if you think about what we are told here, in Deuteronomy, God had laid out the fact that the kings, the leaders of Israel, were to rid the land of spiritists, witches, and mediums. Through the law of Moses then, there was this command for the land of Israel, and Saul had obeyed. So he had made efforts to rid the land of this type of people. And that is an example of Saul's obedience. He was doing what God asked in this particular way. And he'd done it so successfully that there's one woman left who's hiding secretly in Endor. So let me ask you a question. You haven't got to answer, but let's ask the first question. Do witches, mediums, spiritists, do they have any real power? Was it all a show? Just a trick? Was it some kind of sleight of hand? Why is there this law in Deuteronomy to rid the land of these people? Do they have real power? That's the first thing that you need to think about. So that's the opening scene. Then you find Saul going in disguise to this woman and conducting a seance. Is Samuel truly raised in this seance? Or should we put it like this? Does this woman really contact the spirit of Samuel in the seance? And if she does, is it possible to contact the dead in a seance? Is that a real thing? Is it a pretend thing? Can you look at this account and say, we are taught here that what happened was real, it genuinely was Samuel, and therefore we can say that seances genuinely contact the dead. Can we say that? Okay, so this is what you need to think about when you come to this passage about the seance. She, as we've seen, she sees it all as a setup, a way of exposing her to the authorities. It's a way of purging the land of witches. So it's like the secret police going around, seeing if there's anybody still practicing these ways. Let's pretend to be a customer, trick her into agreeing. Then we'll got her, then we can banish her. She thinks like that initially. And she's reassured by Saul that this is a genuine person who genuinely wants to consult the dead. So here's your third thing to think about. Why do people want to conduct a seance? And why do people want to contact the dead? What's going on for someone that leads them to want to get in touch with somebody who's already passed on? I know people who regularly go to seances and they want to get in touch with a grandparent or a deceased parent. And of course, the answer that we have from Saul is that he is seeking guidance. He doesn't want to find out if Samuel is okay. He doesn't want to find out if Samuel's in heaven. He doesn't want to see if Samuel is prospering in the next life. He's thinking about himself. And he wants a word to help him with tomorrow's battle. So he is seeking guidance. But it raises that question. Why do people go to such places, consult spiritists? Why do they want to speak to the dead? And as we keep going, we see the seance as it happens in front of us. So it's perfectly fine to imagine the seance. The woman then does what she does. Saul is standing by, looking on. And she then, whether she looks into a fire, we're not sure. She sees coming up from beneath the ground this form. And she sees it as a spirit form, but it's got shape. It's recognizable. She can describe it to Saul. She describes the mantle that this spirit is wearing. And that's how Saul recognizes the person of Samuel. Is it genuinely Samuel? Is that who we have here? So what we know is dialogue matters more than anything else. And the key part of this passage is the conversation between Saul and Samuel. So let's read that again. Verse 15. Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" Now, there's your question. Samuel has been disturbed. So what happens when somebody dies? Is it rest? We say, don't we, about somebody that we want them to rest in peace. So is that what happens? Was Samuel at rest in peace? From which then this woman commands him to come from that spiritual realm back to make an appearance in the here and now. Is that what's going on? Saul says to him in verse 15, "I am deeply distressed. The Philistines make war against me. God has departed from me. God doesn't answer me anymore." Well, we know Saul, neither by prophets nor dreams. "So this is the reason I've called you, that you may reveal to me what I should do." And it's very sad, because what Saul is looking for is the old relationship he had with Samuel all those years ago. He wants to recapture what he had at the beginning, when Samuel gave him advice, showed him the will of God. He's longing for that again. It's many years earlier. A lot has happened, but that is what Saul is looking for. And the key word, verse 15, the key word is reveal, "that you may reveal to me." Why do people think, why does Saul think that the dead have more knowledge than the living? Do the dead know more than we do? Do they know more about God's plans and purposes than we do? And if they do, can they tell us? These are the questions then that we, and I'm really pleased just to be asking questions before I say any more to you. Verse 16, Samuel replies, "Why do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy?" Saul, what do you expect? You know, you can't, because you're desperate, suddenly hope for God to change his mind, for God to go back on what he's told you. You know he's departed from you. He's departed from you for many years. Just because you're in trouble doesn't mean that God will forget all of that and then come back and speak to you. It doesn't work like that, Saul. That's what Samuel is saying in effect. Verse 17. "The Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me." That means the Lord has kept his word that he revealed by me. He told you that he departed from you, and the Lord has been faithful. He's kept that word. He hasn't deviated from it. He's not gone back on it. What the Lord says is what the Lord does, come what may. That's the faithfulness of God to his word. Verse 17. "The Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord, nor execute his wrath upon Amalek." That was a specific command that God gave Saul many years ago. "And so the Lord has done this thing to you today." And then you get the killer punch. Verse 19. "The Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hands of the Philistines." This is the night before the battle. "Tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me." In the land of the dead, I guess, wherever Samuel is. Tomorrow, Saul will be there. Saul will join him. Jonathan will join him. The other sons of Saul will join him. Now, can you be careful now What doctrine have we got here of the afterlife? Will Saul be in the same place as Samuel in the afterlife? Is he going to be forever in the company of Samuel? But how could Saul, if you want to use these words, how can Saul be in heaven with Samuel when all this has happened? What does it mean then when he says, this time tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me? Is he simply saying, Saul, you'll be dead this time tomorrow? By tomorrow night, the battle will be lost, you'll be dead. Is that what he's saying? The Lord will also, verse 19, deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Can you imagine? You're the king. You're facing a battle. In your desperation, you've gone to a seance to try and get some guidance. And this is what you're told. You'll be dead. Your armies will be defeated. And that's it. That's what you're told. It's no wonder, is it, that Saul collapses? And that's what happens really in verse 20. Whether it's a psychological one, whether it's a state of shock, whether Saul faints at the news, however you understand it, Saul collapses under the weight of what he's told. And he lies on the floor in this condition where even the poor woman herself feels sorry for him. And she tries to help him. And then this very touching scene towards the end where she feeds him. Now, are we all clear about what's happened? Are we all clear about the questions that we need to ask? So I'm going to be very naughty. I'm doing something that I should really not do. I'm going to say that it's difficult to have a dialogue tonight. We're all spread out. There's not many of us. We're on Zoom. It's not ideal. Some of you I know don't join Zoom on a Wednesday, but to me, the best place to discuss these things further and try to answer them will be on Wednesday when we're on Zoom and we can have that open conversation. Questions about seances and about, was it really Samuel? And can the dead speak to us? And what goes on in a se-? We can talk about that if you like. But I am very keen to know what you think. So, I know it's not ideal here on a Sunday night, but does any of you, do any of you have anything to say, anything to ask that's going to help us make some sense of all that we've described tonight? I don't want necessarily questions. We've asked lots of questions. Does anybody have any contribution to make that's going to help us move forward? Let's have that opportunity if anybody does. So I'll stop. Anyone, anything. Or are we all completely baffled by what we've read and described? Any thoughts? And don't forget, I can't see you very well with my glasses on. Anything? Right, okay. So Richard is asking, did this woman truly, genuinely raise Samuel, or was she pretending? Now, that's one of the questions we've asked, haven't we? To answer that, what is the text telling us? Right. So she says he wears a mantle, the sign and symbol of a prophet. Would she have known that anyway? But if she would have known that anyway, why would she, not knowing that her client is the king, why would she have chosen, out of all the possibilities, to say that it was Samuel? Why wouldn't she have said, oh, Saul, it's your father, it's your mother, it's your auntie, it's somebody belonging to you, it's a family member? Why wouldn't she have done that? Why did she choose, if it's a fake, why did she choose to rise or say she has risen a spirit and describe him as a prophet? She doesn't know who this man is. She doesn't know who Saul is. So, verse 12, the woman saw Samuel. She cried out with a loud voice, and the woman spoke to Saul, saying, why have you deceived me, for you are Saul? Now, what I'm saying to you is, if that's a fake, why would she describe it as Samuel to this man who she doesn't know? Why describe, out of all the possibilities of the deceased, is she choosing to say, I've raised a prophet? Why would she do that? So he asked her to bring a prophet. Verse 11, whom would you bring up? Bring up Samuel. So because he's requesting it then, you're saying that's sufficient to tell us that this is all a fake. Is that what you're saying? That's, which is fine. So because he's named someone, then we are saying she has almost, if you like, a green light to say she's done it. Does that sound reasonable? Yes, no? It's an option. So Richard, go to the end of the seance and she's mouthing these words. Would she mouth the words she does if she's faking it? Would she know the outcome of a battle? Would she know that by this time tomorrow, Saul would be dead? Would she have access to that knowledge if she's faking the whole thing? So we've asked some questions about the start, and you're all telling me, yes, Neil, he's asked for Samuel, so she knows who Samuel is, she knows he's a prophet, she raises him up, and she's describing him because she would have seen it. So yes, maybe it's fakery. And then at the end of the seance, don't forget, I'm only asking you questions. At the end of the seance, how would she know to say the outcome of a battle? Would she know that the Lord had taken the kingdom away from Saul years ago? Would she have had all this history that we've had about the fact that Saul didn't kill the Amalekites, like God said? He wasn't obedient, like God said. Was it common knowledge that this king had been rejected by God and therefore God wasn't speaking to him anymore? Would she have known that? How much did the ordinary man in the street know about all this history that we've studied? Don't forget now, I'm just asking you questions. I'm not giving you my opinion. I'm asking you to engage with the text. So we've engaged with the text at the start of the seance. Yes, Neil, he said Samuel. So now I'm saying to you, keep engaging with the text then. Richard, what kind of woman is she? What have you learned about her as a woman? What's the end scene telling you? She's a compassionate woman. She's felt sorry for Saul and she's made him a meal. If she's a compassionate woman and a compassionate medium, what kind of message would she shape for Saul in her compassion, being a compassionate kind of woman? How would she shape her message? She'd comfort him. She'd say something like, oh, you'll be fine tomorrow. The Lord's on our side. He's the God of Israel. He won't let his enemies triumph over us. Look at what the God of Israel has done for us over the centuries. We've had great victories before. We can expect them again. This, whoever writes this book paints a picture of a compassionate woman who, even at the beginning, when she thinks it's a trap and has been reassured, still engages in the seance because of her compassion. So if she's so compassionate, wouldn't she have given a message of compassion to Saul? Instead, it's this message that reveals knowledge, past knowledge, knowledge about what God has said and done, knowledge about God rejecting Saul. She knows all of this if she's making it up. And then she says very clearly, you'll die, your sons will die, and Israel will be defeated. How does she know? Why would she say that if she's making it up? Now, don't forget, everyone, I'm trying not to lead you, and I'm definitely not telling you what I think. But you see how you engage with the text? Okay. So let me just say what Julia said now. Didn't we say a few weeks ago that God sometimes uses people or situations for his own purposes, even if that person is ungodly, wicked, evil? God can use any means to achieve his purposes, Julie, yeah? So can we think of examples of that? When God speaks through or uses what we would not expect? There's loads of examples. So Will is going all the way to the Gospels, and he's using the man possessed by demons who recognized Jesus. What about going backwards? Cyrus. Now, Richard, you're not going back yet. So in the days of Isaiah the prophet, Isaiah prophesied a king who would come at about 150 years' time, Cyrus, whom God would use for his purposes. Persian king, I think. Go back. Go back from David and Saul. Who has God used to speak? So he's gone through Balak, is it? Balaam? What about that little animal? The donkey? God has spoken through a donkey. So are we saying then that this woman genuinely raises Samuel? Samuel genuinely gives a message of truth, and that God is using this, even though God has said, rid the land of these people, God is using this to speak his truth, because there's no other way for his truth to be brought to Saul, because God isn't speaking to him through dreams, through prophets, through the Urim. So there's no other way for God to speak to Saul apart from a medium and a spiritist. So God will use that, even though he's commanded them to be thrown out, because he's done it before and God will do it again. Is that what we're saying? So if we're going to learn that thing, so she fakes them. If that's what you conclude, which is fine, how do you then work out the fact that she tells him the truth? That's your first step. If you decide that this is a genuine seance, that Samuel is genuinely being raised from the dead, or his spirit has been accessed, or she speaks to the dead Samuel somehow, it's a seance. If you genuinely think that's what it's going on here, and so Samuel communicates to this woman from beyond the grave, what's going to happen tomorrow? If that's what you think is happening, then ask yourself the question, how does that fit with what we discovered? I'm on a different chapter now. What have we discovered with verse 3? Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land because of Deuteronomy. How do you square that circle? Can we make that decision? Can you think about that and decide what you think of it, what your opinion is? No, one thing, Richard, and then I'll kind of try and finish things. Sorry? It came true. Right, so Richard is saying then, he's erring on the side that this is a genuine seance, that she genuinely contacts Samuel. Why is it in the Bible if it's all a fakery? And how come she, what she says comes true? Okay, so if we had stuck to the plan this morning and looked at the sermon that we were originally intending, we would have read from, is it 2 Timothy 3? All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for teaching, for admonition. So this passage is scripture, is profitable, is useful, is given by God, is to teach us things, is to lead us to God, to teach us about Christ. So why is it you then if it's not real? Now, what I'm going to do, and it may be very irritating, guys, but I'm going to stop like the author does, like they do on the TV, like they do on films. I'm going to stop at this moment and I'm going to say, we'll come back to it next week. Okay, we're going to have that moment when we want to know what happens next, but we're going to wait. But I want you in the meanwhile to decide what you think is happening here. And if there's one verse, I'll maybe give you two that I want to suggest to you are the key verses and that will unlock the meaning of this passage. Let me give them to you and I'll read them again. Verse 8, okay, this is the first verse. Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes, and he went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, please conduct a seance for me and bring up for me the one I shall name to you. Okay, keep that verse in mind. And then verse 25. So she brought it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. And they rose and went away that night. I want you to hold those two verses. They are the key. And if you unlock that key It'll lead you in the right direction to find the meaning and the lessons that we are to learn. So let's hold it there. Let's come together in prayer.